And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, May 4th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And let's go ahead and see what gold and silver. Gold was up most of the day. We had a high of 17 and 11, and of course, couldn't keep it. We're still up about a buck at 1705. Silver was down 18 pennies, broke 15 at 1486. Platinum was up $7 at 771. Palladium was down 40 bucks at $1930. The USDX today was stronger 0.46 at 99.49. Crude oil was up 1.21 at 20.99. Paper markets, they were down triple digits, $300 points. That's what they're really worth. Anyway, they were down 200-300 points. They managed to have a comeback, and the Dow was up 26 points, 23,749. The NASDAQ fared better, was up 105. 8,710. The S&P was up 12 at 2,842. 10-year yield 0.64%. European markets, Hong Kong was down a little over 4%. Germany was down 3.6%. So they got whacked. And Fear and Greed Index is still holding around that 44 level and 44 number, right below the neutral level. And let's see, you know, it's just so much. I think we've gotten to the point, Dave, where a lot of it is so much of the same thing. And, you know, there's some new things out there, some new numbers. We get the, so I'm not quite sure. It was just a boring Monday, I think. There just wasn't a lot of headline news out there, other than the COVID-19. The debt, which we talk about here each and every single day. April's job report likely to show highest unemployment rate on record. I mean, that's no surprise, and I think that's how the markets are kind of reacting, too. It's no surprise, and you know, it's all baked into the cake right now, and yet I don't think it's a cake that I don't want to eat after it's done baking, because they really don't have the right ingredients in there. And of course, now everybody's thinking everything is going to go back to work. And I think this is the most dangerous part, Dave. Everybody thinks everything's opening. Everybody's going to be going back to work. Everything's going to go back to normal. It's going to be anything but normal. And the damage, a lot of the damage has been done. And that's not going to be, that's not easily erased. It won't be erased. What's happened, happened. And there was a number out today that factory orders, they dropped 10.3% in March. New orders for U.S.-made goods, it was a record decline. Commerce Department said today factory orders dropped the 10.3%. And they started taking the notes, the series, in 1992. So it's the largest decrease since 1992. And of course, we knew they would change the data for February. That was revised down to show orders dipped 0.1% instead of being unchanged as previously reported. And I'll guarantee you they were being kind there. Economists polled by Reuters, they had all expected the factory orders to tumble up, you know, about 9.7%, so they were close. Factory orders decreased 2.8% year-on-year in March. Unfilled orders at factories, that dropped 2.0%. Inventories at factories fell 0.8% in March. after declining 0.4%. Shipments of manufactured goods, that decreased 5.2% in March. So when, and you know, manufacturing, of course, doesn't, you know, it doesn't account for as much as it once did, and or as much as it should. You know, it accounts for about 11% of the U.S. Economic activity. But again, these are numbers that are showing what is happening to the economy, regardless of the stock markets, Dave.
Yeah, another month, another calamity or calamitous numbers, Melody. As we discussed on Friday's program, the Institute for Supply Management reported that its measure of national factory output dropped to an 11-month low in April. The ISM's forward-looking new orders sub-index plummeted to levels last seen in December 2008. Manufacturing was already under pressure from the administration's trade war with China. Manufacturing output declined in the first quarter at its sharpest pace in 11 years. Business investment now has contracted for four straight quarters. And that's even assuming all of those ridiculous stock buybacks. The longest economic expansion in U.S. history ended in the first quarter, with GDP declining at its steepest pace, a reported 4.8%. Sure, it'll be higher when they revise it this month. It's the steepest drop since the Great Recession. Although some parts of the country have started reopening, economists say it's going to take at least 2 years to bring the economy back to pre-coronavirus levels. We think it could take longer than that if, in fact, it ever returns. They expect a wave of bankruptcies and a long period of high unemployment. We'll talk about both of those subjects a little bit later in the program. And then related issue, March transportation equipment orders plunged 41%.
Wow.
In March. Orders were weighed down by a roughly 300% nosedive in demand for civilian aircraft and parts. There's also a 65% decline in order for ships and boats. Motor vehicle and parts orders dropped about 7%.
Well, motor vehicle and parts, that's not too bad.
No, I think I'd like to wait and see what April numbers show. I think that'll be more telling.
Well, you know, and I'm assuming motor vehicles, automobiles and so forth, but I mean, look at the what these manufacturers are giving, the specials that they're giving, the incentives. I mean, I've talked to someone who works for a dealership up there in the Baltimore area somewhere, and they're busy. It's like, really? Who'd want to test drive a vehicle not knowing who was in there before you? And but she says, yeah, they make appointments. They either make appointments. But she says some people walk on. She says they've been busy. Not like it was, but they haven't, you know, gone to zero. It just baffles me. Just really baffles me. And so I guess that's one part of retail that's not doing so bad. But here's another guy, J. Crew. They're going to be filing for bankruptcy today. This is the first major retail bankruptcy since the pandemic started. The New York-based retailer, you know, again, struggling, heavy debt. And then you have sales challenges. I mean, what do you expect out of that equation? The past few years, the brand lost its longtime design chief, Jenna Lyons, and famed retail executive, Mickey Drexler, who was the CEO. And but it was acquired by private equity firms TBG Capital and Leonard Green and Partners for $3 billion in 2011. One of a number of retail acquisitions in that time, and many of those deals had included Payless Shoes, Toys R Us. We know what happened to them. They went belly up. They filed for bankruptcy, as again, debt limited their ability to manage the retail upheaval. So J. Crew, they had $2.5 billion in annual sales and about $93 million in total liquidity as of February, company said this morning it has reached a deal with stakeholders to convert $1.65 billion of its debt to equity. So it has secured a loan, but, you know, and then I think that's what bothers me, Dave, about bankruptcies, particularly with companies. You know, they go in debt. You know, they do restructure. I don't know how much of it gets wiped off the slate, but none of them go out. Some go out of business, but not all of them. They just reopen and start afresh.
They reorganize.
Reorganize.
That's, I think, the vernacular of the time. While, you know, J. Crew's woes have been made worse by the pandemic, forcing a number of its stores to close, you know, the whole retail industry has been thrown into disarray. We talked last week about, you know, estimates of between 50 and 100% of stores closing within the next couple of years, which means that many malls will be closing along with them. Retailers, including Neiman Marcus and JCPenney, were already struggling. They're now under pressure to potentially file for bankruptcy a lot sooner than they had hoped. Neiman Marcus has been in discussions about financing to fund its bankruptcy, while JCPenney just skipped an interest payment. J.C. Crew said it will continue all day-to-day operations, albeit under these extraordinary COVID-19-related circumstances. They operate 182 stores under the name J.J. Crew, as well as 140 Made Well stores. That's the youth brand it launched almost 15 years ago. Things in the retail apocalypse, Melody, it continues.
Yeah, and they've been hit, and they've been hit hard. And I don't know if you can, we are going to be entering into something that is, be interesting to see what comes out of it when this is all said and done. General Electric's aviation, that unit revealed plans today to slash its workforce by 25%. That's 13,000 jobs. The unit manufactures some of the most commonly used passenger and military aircraft engines and provides services including engine overhauls to the aviation sector. The GE Aviation, well, although GE hasn't been doing very well anyway. They've been having their issues way before the pandemic started, but GE Aviation CEO David Joyce told the employees, "To protect our business, we have responded with difficult cost-cutting actions over the last 2 months." And he added, "More is required as we scale the businesses to the realities of our commercial market."
Yeah, well, they're doubly exposed, or GE, the parent is. They were doubly exposed to the aviation slump through its aviation manufacturing arm, as well as its leasing unit, GECAS, G-E-C-A-S. It's one of the largest aircraft leasers. GE last week reported an 8% drop in first quarter revenue and said sales in the aviation wing fell 13%. Boeing said last week it plans to reduce its workforce, about 160,000 total at the end of last year, by 10%. That's 16,000, as it faces a lack of new orders. GE Engines, as Melody mentioned, is the crux of the aviation component. They're on many Boeing aircraft, and the GECAS financing arm has been a major purchaser of Boeing planes, so that obviously putting a big wrench into its plans.
You know, we talk about the amount of debt that Americans are carrying, and nearly 47% of U.S. adults, or, you know, about 120 million people, they have credit card debt, and that's up from 43% reported in early March. The sudden spike in credit card debt, of course, coincides with states issuing stay-at-home orders that have forced millions of businesses to shutter. Alarmingly, 23% of credit card debtors had added to their credit card debt. Millennial credit card holders have been hit the hardest, with more than one in three going further into credit card debt. Well, it's what happens when you don't save. And when it's what happens when our dollar is worthless and rates are zero, it makes it difficult to save. When we have inflation, it's hard for these people to save. Alarmingly, so we talked about the millennials. People with this sudden spike, we have, 30 million people that applied for unemployment. Yeah, they're going to be using their credit cards to buy food. Not for gas, because they don't have to drive anywhere.
Yeah, about it.
I think it's been a month since I filled up my gas tank, but anyway. So, anything else you want to add to that, Dave?
Well, in terms of age groups, I think one of the big ones here is that Schwab's 2019 Modern Wealth Report revealed that less than 40% of millennials, those are folks aged 23 to 38, said they had enough saved to support themselves for 3 months, or minimum of 3 months, if something unexpected like a coronavirus happened. Furthermore, 36% told Schwab they don't have any money set aside for any unexpected expense or unforeseen event. 36%.
Wow.
So those are, I think, some very stark figures. I mean, I'm not even sure this is good news. The creditcards.com report found that the most common strategy for paying down debt is paying the minimum, more than the minimum amount. 60% did that. While that's better than 30 or 40%, 60% means 40% are not paying the minimum. They're using things like balance transfers and paying only the minimum balances, which we know stretches out the length of time it takes to pay off that debt, plus with a lot more interest payments to boot. 13% aren't paying anything at all, or just don't have a plan. Whew.
You know, I think there was a Brookings report argues that surging unemployment claims show that our labor market built for efficiency can crumble in times of crisis. And we're seeing it at huge human and economic costs. And the survey says that the pandemic exposed a weak point in the country's economy. I don't know if it really exposed it, Dave. I mean, it was there. I don't know if it brought attention to it. But the lack of job security for low-wage workers. I think this pandemic didn't show. We're going to head into the break right now. We'll talk about this when we come back. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And May 4th.
I know.
What time zone are we in anymore?
The Twilight Zone.
You know, it's funny, when we were talking a little bit earlier, and we're talking about the millions of businesses that are closed due to the, and I mean, when I think about it, and you know, something else that we're not, they really cut a lot of the foreign news out. I mean, you just, oh, you get to see the stats and everything, but very little reporting is done on overseas as far as the numbers. And I guess they pop up every now and then, but not a lot, Dave.
It's all encompassing. I think, you know, to go there, you got to actually look at foreign news services. And that's where you're going to get more of that kind of information.
Yeah, I need to start doing a little more of that instead of just waiting, you know, for them to pop up on my feed.
Yeah.
We were talking about the lack of security for low-wage workers. I don't think there's, I mean, really, unless you work in the tech industry, you know, the really high earners, I think even middle class, there's no job security anymore like we once had. I mean, things have changed. And many have adapted to unimaginable circumstances, risking their own well-being, implementing public health protocols, keeping the essential bits of the economy, like access to food, that still continues to run. But a lack of labor market protections exacerbates these workers' insecurity, and it does leave the whole system fragile. I think that was just one of the problems. The system was fragile to begin with. Mm-hmm. 53 million Americans, 44% of the labor force, earn low wages. 53 million Americans, 44% earn low wages. In the best of times, these workers cycle more frequently from one job to the next without any type of wage advancement. This lack of job stability causes financial volatility for the households. You have workers' tenuous connection to the labor market is reflected not only in the low wages that they earn, but the any safety net available to them. Workers that earn low wages do not have employer-sponsored health care that account for 22% or 32 million of the country's workforce, Dave.
My, you know, a crisis.
But, you know, I just want to throw this in. We often talk about, and it's only two or three statements, Dave, so be ready. We often talk about them lowering our standard of living. And this shows 44% of the labor force earn low wages. They lowered our standard of living, Dave.
You know, in a crisis like the one we're in right now, these workers are the least attached to their employer. Thus, they're the most likely to be laid off or have their hours reduced. Almost 40% of them, 12 plus million individuals, work in the hospitality and retail sectors, the two sectors most immediately impacted by the coronavirus and the related layoffs. Not surprisingly, the U.S. is experiencing more job losses due to social distancing measures than other high-income countries. Since the 1970s, low-wage jobs as a percent of total employment in the U.S. have increased, while middle-wage jobs have declined. That's in part due to the loss of certain industries, manufacturing in particular, and profound lack of consistent education across income groups that would allow workers to learn new job skills for the future. Many other high-income countries experienced the same dislocation of industry over this period, but their investments in education and training helped those displaced workers and newcomers to the workforce to adapt. In addition, the poor quality of low-wage employment leads to a steep toll on workers' skills and opportunities for training. Low-wage earners have little incentive to spend scarce time and hard-earned money building skills for a job that may or may not be there.
You know, a lot of these folks are the ones that did work in manufacturing. You know, not did, but they're, you know, the group of low-wage earners. There was opportunities for them to work in factories and get the good wages and get the benefits, and that's all gone. When our manufacturing base is only 11% of our economy, as we mentioned earlier. So it's all service. You can't. I'm not going down that road today, but I mean, you can't have high wages in a service industry economy. And so anyway, this is a result, and we're experiencing it. People are experiencing it. And I don't know what they can do, Dave. They can't fix the problem. You know, any manufacturing that's coming, that would come back. I mean, people have gotten used to stuff that doesn't work. Quality doesn't matter. People don't want to pay a higher price for that quality.
Yeah, and you know, in the public companies, even though it's changing a little from year to year, the vast majority of public companies' number one goal is to do well in the eyes of their stockholders.
That's who that matters.
You know, and until that changes, I mean, I think about just all these stock buybacks, and even if a portion of that had gone to employees making $50,000-$40,000 or less, how much more their standards of living, quality of life, could have been. Now, it wouldn't have made any difference by and large, you know, after the pandemic hit, but certainly before and potentially after, things would be better.
But we know that's not going to happen, because it's all about the bottom line. And I mean, even when I was, you know, starting out in my career, it was always, how can you save the company money? You know, you got to save, make them money. You know, if you can save them enough money, you always got bonuses for it. You know, so that's the world that we live in, and we've worked ourselves out of a job. As bizarre as that might sound, we did. And then you have our dollar that buys less. Everything's become more expensive, so the dollars that we do get, you know, just gets less and less and less, and straps more and more people. Then, oh, voila, let's create the credit card. Yeah, that'll give people something that they can fall back on. Sure.
My wife's first job after college was working as a financial analyst for a mortgage corporation, fairly large one in the Philadelphia region. It turns out her last project was to lead a team to re-engineer the corporation ... out of business. This re-engineering project, which, you know, essentially was to beef up its balance sheet in several different ways that resulted in the company's sale and the actual demise of the company. And the loss of jobs for most of those who worked there, including herself. No good deed goes unpunished.
Today our newsletter goes out. It'll go out later this afternoon, and I think you have the article today. You've titled it, As the Nation Reopens, So Goes Cash. Want to tell us a little bit about it, tease the listeners so they go to the website, DGS Coins, and sign up for the newsletter?
Absolutely. It's no surprise that the retail apocalypse is underway. As we mentioned in the first segment, stores have been closing their doors all over the country. And whether they're inside a mall or on a standalone slab, many of those that are still open are saying no to cash. Shoppers continue to switch their buying to Amazon and Walmart.com. And most of the restaurants that have stayed open aren't taking cash. They're operating without any customer contact at all, or virtually none, requiring them to pay online before picking up their orders. What once seemed like the oldest, most reliable, and preferable way of paying seems in peril. Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff, who we quote every now and then, has been an advocate for a less cash society as opposed to cashless. He predicts the crisis is absolutely going to drive people to prefer credit and debit to cash. Now, of course, the jury is out on what Rogoff expects, but
Well, you know what? It just kind of does a little irritate me because I saw a headline the day where Jeff Bezos will be the first trillionaire because of it.
That did not make my day either.
Am I jealous? No.
Well, it's not about that, though.
No, it isn't.
I mean, it's
just there shouldn't be any one person.
Whatever
but then again,
it's a competition.
Yes.
Whatever happened to...
Well, they buy it. That's what Microsoft did. They went out and bought up all their competition.
Well, at least at some point they split up.
Well,
at least somewhere along the line, the Ma Bell split up.
Yeah, but all after the fact. But I mean, it's the first trillionaire. Well, everybody thought it would. Well, Apple was the first, weren't they? Valued at a trillion? Did they ever get to a trillion?
I believe so.
But Bezos would be the first trillionaire.
Yeah, and he only owns 11% of Amazon stock. What does that say about where we're heading? And you can see it. I mean, just as what we talked about with all these other stores closing, there's soon going to be one or two players left.
That's it.
So, Justice Department, are you listening?
You'll have to go to Amazon to buy from JCPenney.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
I'm going to go to Macy's today. Let me put in Amazon.
Wow.
What a weird world. But hey, that guy didn't make a profit for how many years?
Yeah, a lot.
In fact, isn't it corporations have to make a profit in so many years or... You can no longer, well, there's some kind of catch there. I can't remember what it is. I don't know if you know it or not, Dave.
Yeah, there's a tax code. I don't recall if it applies to all companies or just depending on how you're organized as either a corporation or a partnership. There's certain tax incentives for you to make a profit over a certain period of time. We'll check into that for detail. I'm a little rusty on the details anymore.
All right. Well, so we can all be jealous of Bezos. Anyway, you talk about how the digital payments, can you even imagine having that kind of money?
I can, actually.
I mean, you can? I don't think anybody can.
I can let my imagination run freely, and I'd like to think if I even got anywhere close to that, I would hope anywhere before I got anywhere close to that, I would have given it to people who need it more than I do.
Yeah, I agreed. But I mean, that's got to mess with your mind.
Well, I mean, some people are driven by what feeds the ego. And a lot of these modern-day entrepreneurs, I mean, it's always been like that to a certain extent. J.T. Morgans and the Andrew Carnegies and the Robert Barons of the early 1900s.
And look what they do. You know, so, yeah, it's... Anyway, that's stories for another day. But anyway, let's go back to this. You say the digital payments are filling a void.
Well, right now, that's true. The sudden shift toward debit cards and other digital payment forms, a huge opportunity for firms like online payment giant PayPal, which also owns Venmo. PayPal CEO Dan Schulman says the company is seeing the number of new customers setting up accounts each day basically double. That's every day from levels before the pandemic. And Square, that's the digital company run by Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, has found itself fielding calls from merchants whose customers no longer want to touch any surfaces. How much of this scenario is temporary or represents a fundamental change, that remains to be seen. But tech companies have been pushing toward a more virtual, less cash-based payment system for a long time now. And more recently, they've spent a lot more money pressuring regulators to free them from the restrictions that govern traditional banks. And that's worrying a lot of those who look out for older and poorer Americans, groups that tend to be more reliant on paper money, either for lack of access to computers and smartphones, or because they just don't like doing business with banks.
Well, you know, if they don't usher in these virtual programs right away, because people do have short memories, and they do go back to old habits. And one habit that we have every day are these breaks. So we're going to have to. So we'll have to be right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Check out the article, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. We're going to move on, and we're going to talk about Kim Jong-un is back. North and South Korean troops exchanged fire along their tense border yesterday. And this is from the South's military. They said the first such incident since the rivals took unprecedented steps to lower front-line animosities in late 2018. These violent confrontations have occasionally occurred along the border. The world's most heavily fortified. You had the chief joints of staff in Seoul say that the North Korean troops fired several bullets at a South Korean guard post inside the border zone. Are you all right? South Korea.
I almost fell off my chair.
I don't think I would have made that announcement. Are you all right?
I'm good.
I love honesty. And South Korea responded with a total of 20 rounds. I mean, these are not major, you know, 20 rounds. It's no big deal unless you hit somebody. But South Korea didn't suffer any casualties. Defense official says it's also unlikely that North Korea had any casualties. And but still, Seoul is going to continue examining whether there was any motivation for the action. Pompeo, our Secretary of State, said it was believed that North Korea's firing was not intentional. He must have just been cleaning his weapon, right?
There you have it. See, there's always a logical explanation.
Not intentional.
Aside from coincidence.
How do you fire off 20 rounds? Oh, it wasn't intentional.
Well, you know, this comes just a day after Kim Jong-un reappeared in public, or at least was shown in public by a North Korean broadcast. It was after almost 3 weeks, three-week absence. A lot of international speculation about his health. Kim attended Friday's ceremony marking the completion of a fertilizer factory. Great. Near Pyongyang, along with senior officials, state TV showed him smiling and walking around the factories, probably thinking to himself, good God, I need more pain pills. Kim earlier vanished from the public eye after presiding over a Politburo meeting earlier in April to talk about the coronavirus. The Korean Peninsula remains split along the 155-mile-long, 2.5-mile-wide border called the Demilitarized Zone, DMZ. It was created originally as a buffer after the Korean War ended in 1953, although some say that the war was never officially ended. But unlike its name, an estimated 2 million mines, 2 million, are inside and near the DMZ, which is also guarded by barbed wire fences, tank traps, and combat troops on both sides. Interesting development there, Melody.
You know, I don't know why everybody got all upset with him disappearing. I just figured he went into hiding because of the virus.
Yeah.
He disappeared about that time.
I'm sorry.
I mean, and if he would have come out and said that I'm hiding because of the virus, it would have made him look weak. You can't have that.
I'm sure he and his top generals were quite pleased at the tantalizing uncertainty that it fed.
Sure.
Let him think.
You know, Yemen was always a war that kind of, you know, there's been...
Shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. The United Nations has estimated that more than 10,000 people have been killed in Yemen since the start of the war. But now the numbers have been reported much, much higher. More than 24 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance inside of Yemen. People have been forced to flee their homes. They've only been able to take the clothes on their back. And we finance this war for the Saudis. Yemen was one of the world's poorest countries before the war, largely relied on imports for food and medicine. The war demolished any remaining hope for its people. And again, you have to look to the other side too. I mean, isn't it Iran is the one who came in here to, you know, help with the other side. So, I mean, they're just as guilty.
The Saudis.
They're just as guilty as the Saudis. And more than 2 million children under the age of 5 have been classified as acutely malnourished. Poor sanitation and waterborne diseases such as cholera have affected more than 1 million people, and it's left hundreds of others dead. So when you just talk about 10,000 casualties, no, there's many, many more. And maybe not from a direct bullet,
right?
But certainly there is a multiplier effect on that. So more than 3 million Yemenis have been displaced by the ongoing conflict as of last year, and over 65,000 have fled the country entirely, Dave.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation. The worst humanitarian disaster in the world right now, certainly. So many, I think you raise a good point about 10,000 casualties, perhaps, from shooting and bombings, but we've read reports in the past on this program, well in excess of 1 million people dying from starvation as a result of that war. You know, we provided billions of dollars in weaponry and intelligence support to the Saudis, which backs the Yemeni government. That certainly made things a lot worse. There's been no progress to end the war either, much as we were hopeful during a ceasefire a few months ago. International groups are accusing both Saudis and the Houthi rebels of committing war crimes, and far too many people are paying the price, Melody.
President Trump has promised a conclusive report on the Chinese origins of the coronavirus outbreak. President Trump pledged the report yesterday in a virtual town hall with Fox News, in which he had added that he had little doubt that Beijing misled the world about the scale and risk of the disease. He still fails to mention the president's name when reporting on this. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said enormous evidence shows that COVID-19 outbreak began in a laboratory. Well, everybody knows it began in a laboratory, so I don't know what the big deal is. You know, we get it. It happened. We're going to begin giving a very strong report as to exactly what we think happened, and President Trump thinks it will be very conclusive. His opinion was they made a mistake. They tried to cover it. They tried to cover it up. They tried to put it out just like a fire. American and Chinese officials have been trading charges for weeks as the U.S. became one of the countries hardest hit by the disease. Trump has been ratcheting up efforts to paint China as a villain. And so, you know, here we go. And, yeah, I mean,
nice diversionary tactic.
Exactly. And he opened the door. Oh, we're going to be strong. We're going to do this. You know, we're going to find out who get to the bottom of this. Oh, they just made a mistake. Two different things.
Yeah. Well, and now after months of not hearing anything about this, this new spat, some are calling it, is renewing fears that the phase one trade deal reached by the U.S. and China in January won't be enough to prevent their relationship from becoming more confrontational. Although China has avoided criticizing Trump by name, its foreign ministry late last week accused some U.S. officials of trying to shift their own responsibility for their handling of the epidemic to others. Chinese state media also released an animated video mocking the speed of the U.S.'s response to the outbreak. Now, China has reprimanded Wuhan police for punishing doctors who sounded early warnings about the disease and replaced local officials responsible for the outbreak. That's a tad different from the early days when they had reprimanded a Chinese doctor for bringing its attention to the world. They're certainly not innocent in this either. Yet Beijing says its response has been open and transparent. Give me a break. China's foreign ministry has cited Trump's tweets praising Xi's handling of the outbreak as evidence of U.S. satisfaction with its response. We've got to watch what we say there, Mr. President. Earlier yesterday, the AP reported that U.S. officials believe China covered up the extent of the outbreak in part to stock up on medical supplies that are needed to respond to the virus. We shall see.
Yeah, it's just such, look, if you're going to hold them accountable, then hold them accountable. Show the details and so forth. But don't one minute say, don't praise the president. And when it comes to, when it does come to Xi, that's when Trump will praise him. Oh, it was a mistake. How do you make a mistake? Oh, I forgot to lock the door. geez.
Yeah, time for some healthy skepticism. I don't think this is the time for benefit of the doubt, Melody.
Either you stand strong, you do what you do, you find out, and be strong, but don't wimp out. That's exactly what's happening, but wimping out. Oh, well, he was a good leader, and then, oops. And anyway... President Trump is also threatening what sounded like a resumption of the trade war for this. If Beijing doesn't meet the terms of the agreement signed in January to buy more American products, he again praised tariffs as a weapon for leverage and punishment, but stopping short of saying he'll use them. If they don't buy, we'll terminate the deal. Very simple. Asked by a business owner if he'd consider rolling back tariffs still in place on Chinese goods, Trump declined to say either way. He said existing tariffs mean China's paying billions of dollars into the U.S. Treasury and suggests that he was redirecting those funds to American farmers hurt by retaliation on the U.S. imports. I did see that they did extend more of the bonus or the bailouts to include agriculture today.
Yes.
The bailouts that they've done, I saw where they extended that to the agriculture businesses. And so the story goes on with the tariffs. Tariffs at a minimum are the greatest negotiating tool that we ever devised and we never used for negotiation. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, this is a complicated game. I mean, I don't know if they're playing poker or chess. Whatever you want to call it, but it's certainly not the chess or checkers, excuse me. Mm. Whichever game it is, it's a dangerous one if it involves more tariffs. That's not just me saying that. That's a number of economists. Stephen Barrow, who's Standard Bank's head of foreign exchange strategy, said the last time a U.S. president imposed significant tariffs in the middle of a recession, it's in the 1930s. It turned a recession into a depression. So let's be careful what we ask for out there.
Well, we're going to be heading into a depression anyway, so...
So bring it on.
So just bring it on. Let's get it over with. You know?
There you go.
Quit dragging it out. Just get it done. Get it over with, and we can start anew. There was one other little article. The Iran border guards said to kill dozens of Afghan migrants. They said this on Saturday. There was a claim that dozens of them have been detained in Iran. But this is what Iran does. Afghan news beat reported that about 50 migrants being illegally smuggled into Iran, escaping the war to seek work, were caught by Iranian border guards. I thought that area was calming down. I thought there was a treaty, a peace treaty, or a halt to with the Taliban.
Apparently that group of Iranian border guards didn't get the memo.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah. But so you know, again, it's an estimated 80% of the Afghan population lives on $1.25 a day. So $1.25, unbelievable. Unbelievable, this hour has gone. And thank you, Dave.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I will be back tomorrow with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.